What does it mean to feel special? Have you yourself ever experienced VIP treatment where your name is on the special list? I had a very minor opportunity to do this. I was up on the mountain a couple days ago with Sarah, well, on Friday night. And we arrived there and there was a lineup. And we got into line and the people in front of us, two people in front, were told, "Your name is not on the list, I'm sorry." And then it came to our spot and I was able to say my name and they said, "Yep, it's on the list, you may enter." It feels good to be the special VIP, right? To get that access. Have you ever experienced that? Do you have any recollection of that experience? In our culture, our vision of what it looks like, the high living, when you've made it, your name is basically on all the VIP lists. Think of Formula One racing. Anybody here follow Formula One? Who was watching the race this morning? Ooh, we got one. That's so exciting. I was expecting a total blank. But who of you here know the name Michael Schumacher? Right? Almost everybody knows that name. He's a Formula One racer, formerly. He is somebody, that name is so well known, he's a VIP everywhere he goes. And our vision in our culture is that you've made it, you've really made it, when everybody knows your name and you're treated as the very important person. You're the celebrity wherever you show up. You get the greatest welcome. They'll roll out the, "Oh my goodness, this person is coming to our restaurant. Let's make them extra welcome." The more you've been on that list, the longer you've been there, the more you would start to take it for granted. It's a vision of the good life. I wonder if this text in Revelation is inviting us into something different. If this chapter 19, as part of the whole witness of the book of Revelation, is inviting us into a good life that is something more. Now, we're reading this text as part of our sermon series, as Carol said, in the book of Revelation. And last week, we talked about Armageddon. Armageddon being a place, not necessarily an event, but a place where the armies of darkness are gathering for battle. And our Christian response to Armageddon, to the armies of darkness amassing for battle, is that we are to respond by worshiping. And worshiping God. And that leads us to today, in which I want to ask, what is Jesus' big goal? If you had a magic wand and you could just make things work out just the way you want to, what would you like to have happen, Jesus? And his response here in chapter 19, we see, he tells us, "I would like to have a great big feast, a marriage feast, where every single guest who's invited is VIP, because every single guest is actually in the wedding party. And get this, every single guest, all of you all together, are in fact the bride." That's the guest at the wedding party. This is actually, I mean, I've been to one wedding where I was the groom. And at that wedding, you know, people say, you know, nice things to me, but I'm not the guest of honor, am I? So everybody who's invited, Jesus says, my vision of what I want to have happen, if I could have everything work out the way I want, it's a great big feast where everybody who's invited is the very special guest. The book of Revelation of Jesus Christ. This text is the story of the great movement through history of how God is working things out towards his vision of the good life. His vision of everything worked out okay, which is a party. A party where everybody he loves has been invited. And we're going to use the rest of the Bible to kind of figure out, what does Jesus mean by this? This vision, he's told us a lot about it if we look in the rest of the Bible. So I'm going to refer to Matthew, to Revelation 22, to Isaiah, and you'll probably think of some other texts as well that talk about this. Before I get to those texts, what I want to first do is think about our context. If Jesus' vision of the good life is a great party, how does that impact our context? And I want to reflect on our context first. So, what do we see in our time? What is it like to live right now? Well, something that we see right now, and I've touched on this a few times as we've talked about the beasts and the whore and the dragon. In our time, we see increasing division. We see anger, we see hate, and we see an increase in violence. As people feel more threatened, they're more likely to choose violence. Different people groups are identified, and different people groups will tell each other, tell themselves, that's the enemy, and we need to fight against them. The threats are visible often from all directions. And what we see now in our time is that if there's a good idea for human flourishing, such as no human being should be without food to live, or no human being should be without good employment or the ability to pay for home, for housing. If we have a good idea like that, it's hard for that idea to win the day. A good idea, if it comes from the other team, is a bad idea. So even if there's a good idea, it might not win the day because of the division and everybody seeing everybody else, every other group, as a threat. So in our context, if you have a good idea, how do you get it to thrive? What do you have to do? Well, what you have to do in our time is you have to invite over the most powerful and the most influential people that you can think of. These are the kingmakers or queenmakers. No queen ever stands alone. They always have to provide avenues of greater wealth and greater power to those queenmakers. If you want to be queen, you have to promise that you're going to make things better for those queenmakers. If they will give you the avenue and the ability to make it happen for them, you promise them that you can deliver greater things for them. So you invite over the most powerful and the most influential, and you say, together, if all of you give me the seat of authority, I'll make life better for you. That's how you're going to get your idea out into the world. You have to unify the queen makers around a common goal or a common enemy. In your mind, think extreme gold, extreme wealth. This is the kind of power that can shape our world. It's all brought together in one big party, jostling and mingling together. If I scratch your back, you'll scratch mine. And they're all close enough that they could literally do it, let alone figuratively. This kind of governing does not promote moral goodness, does it? It does not promote good stewardship of the earth. It's just not going to happen. It does promote selfishness, greed, and entitlement. It's what the book of Revelation shows us as the Whore of Babylon at work, hosting a banquet of wealth of billions upon billions, promising even more billions to the others. You see, the book of Revelation even describes an alternate banquet, a feast that echoes the whore, the beasts, and the dragon that could happen in our time. At these banquets, the host is going to say something like, let me promise you that I can deliver what you need if you support me. This kind of leadership in our context, when it happens, it increases division, and it will bring for our world even more division and tension. It's a vision of a good life. How does it differ from Jesus' vision? Well, it's a vision of a banquet that's for us. The others are outside. And if you pay attention to this vision of the good life, you recognize that even inside the banquet, there's still this sense of tension. Because I know that these people are only loyal to me for so long as I can provide what they really want. You know, if they say, yeah, I'm going to come to your birthday party, maybe. If something better doesn't come along that weekend. That's basically what's happening in these governing situations that echo the whore and the beasts. They're saying, yes, I'll come and I'll support you unless, you know, I get a better offer. So it's not just at the top in the governance sectors where we see this echo of Babylon. It also happens even here in Courtney and Comox. You could invite someone over for your birthday and they'll say, yeah, I'll come, but as long as, you know, I don't know, the weather looks really good and the snow flies. You have to understand, I had to go skiing that weekend. Sorry about your birthday. This is a vision of the good life, where you will go to that party so long as it benefits you. This is where we are. So how does the church respond and live and witness and testify in this context? Well, the church's response recognizes, first of all, that we're in a different context than we were 40 years ago. In our time 40 years ago or so, if you had a really good idea, about how life should be lived for human flourishing, there was a chance that that idea could win the day, I think. I think we've kind of lost that. It's no longer about trying to find, I've got a really good idea, if I just get people to hear it, then that idea has a chance to succeed. Instead, you need something different. And so what Christianity has done recently, predominantly you're going to see this in denominations and churches, is that we have to respond by defining our identity. As the world becomes more and more secular and more divided into different groups, and these different groups are in these power corrupt relationships, us as a church or a denomination, we need to really define who we are. Try to make sure that people understand this is what Christianity looks like. So we're going to define our identity sharply and clearly. We're going to declare identity, and everybody who's in our group kind of needs to get on board so that it's really clear who we are. We need to all march to the beat of our team drum. As the world is increasingly secular, we need to more clearly define ourselves. Does that resonate with you? Do you kind of get a sense like, I could see why that would be a reasonable response to do in light of our context? So this is what churches have done. But here's the thing. If you try to define your individual church, you're very small. If you try to define your denomination, you're a little bit bigger, but you're still one identity in a host of many identities in the world. Perhaps you want to define yourselves as evangelical. Well, that's certainly bigger, but it's still going to get kind of muddy and lost. What if we could partner? What if we could partner with power in order to amplify our message? Sadly, this is what Christian churches and denominations have done. We're going to focus on identifying this is who we are, and then we're going to try to partner in order to amplify our message. What ends up happening is an echo of our context. We're no longer shining a light that is a reflection of what's happening in heaven, this vision of the great feast. Instead, what we're doing is we're reflecting and shining a light that actually is kind of an echo of our context, where we're trying to barter and grab power. And we see this in our churches and denominations, really focusing on a clear boundary, but also partnering in order to gain power. What we need instead is an echo of heaven. We need an alternate witness, and this text invites us into it. This text invites us into the vision of Jesus Christ, his vision of a banquet, hospitality. What I think that this text, its context in the book of Revelation, and the whole Bible invites us into is radical hospitality. My sense of the witness of the whole New Testament is that for Christian people in a world that is becoming increasingly secular to us and in us and around us, is that we are called to radical hospitality. This is how we are invited to minister and to witness to our world. Radical hospitality. I don't know, Micah, you keep using that word radical. Do you have to use it? Can't you just say we're invited into hospitality? I mean, perhaps, Micah, you grew up in the 90s. Well, you grew up in the 80s. So that's when the word radical was, you know, rad. My kids probably won't let me use the word anymore. Doesn't radical sound a bit too much? Can't we just be called to hospitality? It's too extreme, and extremism is our problem right now. We don't want to be radicals, do we? But here's the thing. If you're not radical, then you are, in fact, supporting the status quo. And the status quo right now will see increased inequality, increased oppression, decreased health care for all, continued concentration of power and wealth. The status quo echoes the stories of the revelation of Babylon, the whore, and the beast she rides on. We don't need to be afraid of being radical. The word radical means simply back to the root. It's change that takes place all the way down at the root, at the base, at the foundation. We're not just asking for a little bit of tweaking to our hospitality. You know what we really need in Christianity is just a little tweak to our hospitality. You need to stop asking people to take their shoes off when they come in for a meal. You can say to them, you can leave your shoes on, right? That's just tweaking your hospitality. We need radical deep, to the root, authentic hospitality. Don't be afraid of being radical in this regard. We need to be radical so that we do not echo Babylon, which is our culture at its worst. Instead, we need to echo the vision of Jesus. Chapter 19 tells us, "Blessed are all who are invited to the marriage supper of the Lamb." So chapter 19 opens with this great praise that the Babylon whore has been thrown down. And then we see this vision of singing, and we can imagine this party happening and all who are invited to the party. Well, chapter 22 gives us a little bit of a clue who's invited. Chapter 22 says this, "The Spirit and the bride say, 'Come.' Let everyone who hears say, 'Come.' And let everyone who is thirsty come. Let anyone who wishes to take the water of life as a gift." This is, of course, echoing the prophet Isaiah 55, which says, "Hear, behold, listen. Everyone who thirsts, come to the waters, and you who have no money, come buy and eat. Come buy wine and milk without money and without price." Who's invited to the marriage supper of the Lamb? It's not complicated. Everyone. Everyone is invited. And who did Jesus eat with? Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Jesus was accused of eating with the wrong sort of people, wasn't he? They were the people who didn't do things right. They were the people who were out of order. They weren't following the rules. They were shameful sinners. And Jesus eats with them. He blesses them by eating with them. They were the wrong people. And he says to them, he even says to a thief, "Today you will be with me in heaven." You can see why the rulers, the governors at that time, seeing a man who eats and drinks with sinners and then also claims to be a great teacher, even the Messiah, he cannot be allowed to continue to do this. It's going to mess everything up. He must be stopped. But this is Jesus's hospitality, and he extends it even to his enemies, which is all of us. He's welcoming to anyone who is thirsty. He's welcoming to anyone who says, "I am blind. I can't see. I need help." He's welcoming to anyone who says, "I am hungry, so desperately hungry for the bread of life." Even if I don't have everything together, if I am thirsty, if I am weak, if I am hungry, I am welcome. This is the vision of hospitality that Revelation reminds us is the vision of the good life that we want to be witnesses to. We want to be witnesses to this banquet where there's no VIP line to cut in front, right? Where everybody else is in one big long line, and then you see the great, well, who are the great heroes of the Christian faith? Mother Teresa, oh no, she gets, of course, no, you go in front of me. There's no VIP line at this banquet. None. Get it out of your imagination. Remove it. There's no first class. There's no economy class. There's not people who wanted to get an invite, but there's not enough room. There's none of that. If you wanted to be there, if you're thirsty for the life of God, you are invited. Therefore, our response into the world we find ourselves, which is full of division, anger, and hatred, our response is to be hospitable, to show authentic welcome, not a welcome with conditions, but hospitality that is radical and deeply authentic to the vision of Jesus Christ. I've been a part of this congregation for 5 years, and I see this radical gift of hospitality alive here. I see it in the way you treat one another, particularly those who are more likely to be isolated and alone. The gift of hospitality is alive and well in this congregation. When you are participating in hospitality this way, you're actually working against division. You're actually working against the dark forces of evil that are at work in our world. You're participating in the very battle that happens at Armageddon. But that's not the end. There's one more twist that Revelation throws at us. Revelation does something remarkable in chapter 3. In chapter 3, Jesus is speaking to the church of Laodicea. And he starts off chastising them, and he tells them, "You're actually so bad, I want to spit you out." Verse 20 then, after he tells them Like, that would be an awful thing to hear from Jesus Christ. Verse 20, he then says to them, I stand at the door and I knock. Notice that when he says, I stand at the door and I knock, he's not saying it to an unbeliever. This isn't Jesus saying, I'd like to come into your heart, as has often been spoken about in Christian churches. Jesus is actually speaking to a Christian church, and he's saying, I'm not feeling so welcome here. I'm not actually one of you, but I'm standing at the door and I'm knocking. When I hear and I read this text, I don't imagine Jesus doing this during the daytime, because the door would be open. There'd be people around the home. You would come up to the home and you'd just call out, hey, are you here? Anybody around? Oh yeah, they're busy in and around the house. The houses aren't huge, so you'd be able to see. No, this is probably nighttime. The door is closed. He's standing at the door and he's knocking. He needs a place to stay. Of course, if you refuse somebody knocking at your door in nighttime, you put shame on your whole family and your whole community because you're inhospitable. Jesus is asking for basic hospitality here, radical, root hospitality. He stands at the door and he knocks. As Christians, we have this kind of idea where we think of ourselves as the ones who are connected with God, connected with the Holy Spirit. So when we invite somebody into our homes and we say, welcome here, I hope that you get to experience some of God's hospitality the way I've experienced it. I will be like Christ to you in a sense, welcoming you into my home and let's have a feast together. And I hope that you feel the love of God in the way I'm expressing hospitality to you. Well and good. Chapter 3, Jesus stands at the door and he knocks. When you express hospitality, oh my goodness, it turns out you're expressing hospitality not to a stranger, not to a friend, not to a family member, but to Jesus Christ. Matthew 25. When I was hungry, you gave me food. When I was thirsty, you gave me drink. When I was a stranger, you gave me welcome. When I was naked, you clothed me. When I was sick, you took care of me. When I was in prison, you visited me. Lord, when did we see you this way? Jesus says, just as you did it to one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did it to me. Radical hospitality, right to the very root, expressing the hospitality that God has given us, expressing that hospitality from somebody who needs nothing. God needs nothing and he gives us hospitality. When we pass on this gift, we're actually expressing that hospitality back to him, even as we give it to those in our lives. The stunning reality is when we practice the radical hospitality the way Jesus does, we're actually receiving Jesus as the guest. Now, many of you know this reality. You have expressed hospitality, and in so doing, you didn't expect any payment back from that person, but what happened was, in the moment, you realized, I feel closer to Jesus Christ, even as I am serving somebody else. In our current culture, the kind of hospitality that happens there is the kind of hospitality where you work the room to try to make things happen, to bring things into alignment with your vision. That kind of hospitality is its own reward. You get what's coming to you. The Jesus-like hospitality, the radical hospitality, that reflects his invitation to the banquet, if we practice this kind of hospitality, not trying to gain power and influence, if we express hospitality the way Jesus invites us to, my brothers and sisters, he will be the one who shows up at your door. Oh my. My prayer for you this week is as you get the opportunities to express hospitality, and there are so many, it's not just inviting people into your home. Pay attention, where can I express hospitality? Where can I be welcoming Tuesday at 9:30? I don't know what you do at that time. Last week I talked about Janice in accounting. Maybe you need to be welcoming to her. How can you be welcoming in the middle of your week this week? Jesus is inviting you into that space. Be welcoming, and I promise you, he's going to show up. You're going to be welcoming and hospitable to him. May he bring you this grace, and may you know in that space the very presence of the Lord Jesus Christ and his love for you. In his name I pray. Amen.